There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
So a lot of times when we do these shows, right, we get, you guys know, everything's off the cuff. He's praying. We always do these things off the
cuff. I'm listening intently.
Please, thank you. Thank you. It's so nice to have a focus.
Was it mine over listen to you?
No, you're forced to. We were all forced to listen to each other.
Yes.
But normally when we start one of these, we joke about these things. We, you know, like, we're off the cuff here. We don't like to show up here with too much prepared material. Comedy wise,
let's just hop right into it.
But normally, it's Kissel that has some joke. You know, you show up.
I have,
like,
a good joke.
Yeah, but actually,
about a joke.
This is Marcus's joke.
It's my turn.
Whoa!
When I said the word, and I've never had this. It was weird.
Okay.
It was like his clothes morphed. You know, all of a sudden, he had a suede tracksuit on. And I was like, "Where'd that come from?" And I saw he was wearing flip flops. He had two little dogs with him.
Whoa!
I was just like, "Whoa, where did he come?" Because I said, "Oh, we should do this topic. It's really super compelling. It's about La Llorona."
Yeah,
La Llorona.
Yeah,
I'm working on it.
No, you got it wrong.
Okay, I'm working on it.
Yeah, and then Marcus said,
"La Llorona, da 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 da." La Llorona.
You got a joke.
No, that is.
That's a song parody at its worst.
But guess what? I then realized afterwards I have a better song parody hopping in my mind.
Wow.
I was pitching this show to a very successful man yesterday, and he said he was going to listen to this episode.
God, this is it. Mr. Big's here?
Kind of.
All right, Mr. Big, you ready? Here we go, all right? First you take your kids and you put them in the river and you put your head down and you make yourself a quiver. Every time I cry, I make the hoven shiver.
Hey, La Llorona. All right, yeah.
Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. Ben hanging out with Marcus.
I don't think that's too fair because I came up with mine off the cuff and Henry's had a week to think of Macarena La Llorona.
I wrote that down last night.
It was very successful. Okay, everyone. Today we're discussing La Llorona.
Llorona.
There we go.
We're keeping all this in. This whole episode is about us. This whole year, honestly, we're trying to do more. Embracing other culturas.
Of course.
Yes.
So how do we see how you guys see and how do we get into there? And this is a good spooky way into entering the Latin American culture.
Absolutely. I'm super excited to get into this.
Well, La Llorona is a legendary creature of Mexican descent,
ooh,
both urban legend and mythical boogeyman. She's a cautionary
boogie woman.
Boogie woman.
How dare you?
Yes.
She's a cautionary tale told to children, teenagers, drunks, and amorous youngsters alike in a variety of ways that all share the singular qualifier of a weeping woman. Well, there are thousands of variations on the La Llorona tale, to the point where families can have their own versions of the creature that are passed down through the generations.
Cool.
Even separate villages in the same province will have different stories of La Llorona.
It follows.
Different neighborhoods and cities will have different La Lloronas.
Interesting.
La Llorona comes in a bunch of different fashions. Yeah. You got Arctic fever Llorona.
Yes.
You've got down in the cacti Llorona. You've got delicious
mountain rush La Llorona.
Oh yeah, and cool breeze La Llorona.
My favorite new Mountain Dew, Cold Sore.
I love it
because each one has been licked by another person who may or may not have a cold sore.
Well, in its simplest form,
why don't call them cold sores? They look pretty hot to me.
That's a really good pun.
That's a good pun.
Something. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
I told someone to listen to this episode right off the
Mr.
top.
Mr. Big thing, remember. And when did it be La Llorona? Right, I don't have any more words.
La Llorona.
Let's just hop right into it.
Technically, it's wordplay. Well, in its simplest form, La Llorona is a cautionary river tale that's supposed to keep kids from drowning. It's a lot like the Scottish Kelpie. Hundreds of water demons exist throughout hundreds of cultures. Any culture that exists or develops near rivers or bodies of water has something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, That version of La Llorona tells you to not go down to the water by yourself because there's a scary lady down there who will, she'll take you away, she'll rip you to shreds with terrible claws, or she just fucking eats you right then and there.
You disappear. But that is the most simplified version of La Llorona.
Yeah, yeah.
But do we really need these tales when alligators exist?
Not
there. Like, why does everyone, we don't need, I am scared of sea creatures already.
The only problem with kids.
River creatures?
Kids will, like, they're fascinated with animals, I think. They're like, oh, what you have to do is you got to take a fucking raw chicken. You got to go over the river and be like, kids, you want to see what's in the river? And you watch this thing go, snap, 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 out of the thing, eating the chicken out of your hands. And be like, you ready to go back to the river now?
Yeah, exactly. Because at the end of the day, if you're a kid and you're told that there's a crocodile down there or an alligator, not only are you going to go look at it, you start thinking, maybe that alligator could be my friend.
Love it.
Maybe I could use that alligator to go eat the kids who are beating me up at school every day.
Hasn't met me yet. Can't figure out how to assemble the AR-15. I need to get that croc out of the river and into my classroom.
That's the Disney vacation?
Yeah.
Disneyfication?
Of school.
Of the alligator.
No, the anthropomorphization.
Wow. This is not good. These long words are not good for us.
I don't like it.
But when the story is more complicated, La Llorona is a tale of a lover scorned and what may become from a betrayal most bitter. This is how that version of the story goes, as recounted in an article about La Llorona published in an issue of the Texas Observer.
God, cool. Texas Observer, you have to have big eyeballs.
You do. Also, great publication.
Yeah. In this iteration, a beautiful young woman beguiles a rich man, and this big shot consequently wines and dines the beggarly beauty. And then eventually, they have kids together, and it all happens on the hush-hush. Mm-hmm. And he keeps telling her, hey, don't worry. One of these days, you're going to be Mrs. Big Shot.
Hey, man, it always works out like that. Ladies, shoot for the moon, because sometimes you end up on the dick of a producer.
Well, look at Queen Camilla.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Timmy, perfect.
Seriously.
Dick riding all the way to royalty.
Absolutely.
Well, eventually, though, the wealthy man gets bored stringing along his side piece, and he abandons her, and he abandons the children. He tells her, I'm never going to take you as my wife. Are you fucking stupid? You're some kind of fool or something? I was never going to do that.
No!
This man's about to be haunted for the rest of his life.
No!
It was just pillow talk, baby. Come on.
I'm special.
Well, driven insane by the casual cruelty of her lover.
No!
All right, that is a horrible interpretation of this scorned woman, Mr. Zabrowski.
The woman takes her children down to the river and drowns them one at a time.
Yeah, fucking Neil Young.
Yeah.
So much like Neil Young. Also, can we please have Keith Morrison just tell us about this story on Dateline?
And would you believe she took her children to the river?
What a hunk, you leathery wallet.
But when she sees the dead bodies of her toddlers floating downstream, she realizes what she's done and drowns herself thereafter.
You never want to sound like a turkey. Your last breath should not sound like a turkey trying to survive the knife of Sarah Palin.
Her soul soon arrives at the pearly gates. Mm. She stands in front of St. Peter, and St. Peter asks,
hey, where are your children, young woman?
Miserable, she lies.
No, say!
Wait.
I do not know! I know, you're right, you forget.
Yeah, I forget,
I'm not doing Hilaria.
Yeah.
No!
Wait, but why didn't the kids go to the pearly gates? The kids didn't go to heaven? She drowned her kids and God sent them to hell?
That's what they get.
Possibly purgatory. They may not have been baptized.
They had the opportunity at some point.
If you are drowned, baptized.
That's what I think.
No matter what.
Yeah.
No, I would imagine the children are probably in purgatory or St. Peter's just fucking with her. The kids might be hiding.
They're already in there.
Yeah, the kids might be hiding behind St. Peter like...
Well, that's a lie by omission, St. Peter.
Yeah, the two kids are just both sitting on Gilles de Rais's knees in heaven.
No.
Enjoying himself.
Gilles de Rais is not in heaven.
Well,
he apologized at the very end.
He did.
I know.
She's miserable. She lies. She says, I don't know where they are. So... St. Peter sends her back to Earth, cursing her to wander forever as a restless soul until she finds the bones of her children.
The bones of my children!
The woman's spirit then returns to Earth as La Llorona, eternally weeping and wailing while wandering the riverbanks of Mexico and Texas until she finds those bones. But until that day comes, little boy.
That's you.
I am the little boy.
La Llorona may just settle for you.
No!
You can have me. Hey, I'm actually looking for a mom.
There's nothing you'd love more.
Isn't that nice? Also, you don't have to buy your ghost mom a house.
And then they become one eventually.
Yeah.
I want to shit. There has been a lot of proof of La Llorona that has been captured over time. Mm. People have the reason why we ended up doing this episode was because we were doing our SiriusXM call-in show. And I forgot what the subject was, but La Llorona came up.
It was so cool.
And I've never had this in our history of the small history we have of doing the call-in
show.
Open
lines,
the boards just blew up.
Yeah.
And a lot of people called in and said they had witnessed La Llorona. Fernando, our own producer, believes that he probably had some form of visitation by La Llorona. It's the same thing again and again. You see a woman by a body of water dressed all in white quite often than not. She turns and looks at you. Where was a face is a black hole, and it emits a wail, right? Mm-hmm. And this is actual footage. Of a, well, auditory footage of La Llorona, she make it a noise.
I'm telling you, those calls were compelling.
That's a whale right there.
No, that's coyote.
No, looking for bones. You see, look, you can see La Llorona is at the top there on the tree.
Sounds like Yogi Berra is getting pegged or something.
Getting La Llorona.
It sounds like Chewbacca before the sound mixer, mixed in the last animal.
Okay, this is all things probably built towards La Llorona.
Okay, interesting. Further evidence. Great.
So there's that. There's also this other picture of a blurry smudge that I have here that's also very good. None other than La Llorona. You can see, watch that. Look at that. That's a phantom.
I agree.
I don't know what that is. Yeah. That's La Llorona.
Yeah, sure.
But everybody's La Llorona. Seen her. Everybody's seen her. And they all say, too, it's the same. It's a sense of foreboding and of longing.
Yes.
A horrible way to spend eternity.
Yeah.
Edging, basically.
Honestly, it sounds like... Some people like it.
No, but they like the process after the edge. But if you just edge, woo, it would be like, all I want to do is climb Mount Rushmore and hang off the nose of George Washington, but you only get to his chin forever.
I feel like it's more like, I want to go to a restaurant, but it's booked.
Hmm. It's like that. That would be your purgatory.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
Now, La Llorona isn't just a tale meant to keep kids from drowning. And what my wife informs me is a culturally Hispanic thing, La Llorona is also used by parents to punish excessive crying.
Oh, sure.
Hmm. It's the worst version of, you want to cry? I'll give you something to cry about.
And they always do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because after all, Llorona translates to crybaby.
Oh.
And kids are told that if they cry too much, they will eventually invoke the spirit of the ultimate crybaby, La Llorona.
Ooh, I thought you were going to say Johnny Depp.
Great movie!
Wonderful movie. Iggy Pop, highly underrated in that movie.
No kidding!
Hatchetface was my favorite character.
Hatchetface is wonderful. Yeah, everything about crybaby.
Iggy Pop's having a moment.
He is. Well, as the logic goes, if La Llorona killed her own children when she was alive, imagine what she'll do to you now that she's dead.
She's learned her lesson and she'll take care of them.
That would be nice.
She realized, hey, maybe that was all a waste. And now I'm obviously here wailing and searching for my lost children. Maybe I got these new children.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to start over.
No.
In a way that I can grow and change, step by step.
Step by step.
You put La Llorona in the character of Tim Duffy's position.
Yes.
La Llorona would understand, actually, I have to grow up. Uh-huh. In order for myself, I might be in body an adult, but I need to be one up here as well.
Absolutely. Right. She needs to go to a ghost therapist. And you know what? I'm not for the remakes of films. They're remaking White Men Can't Jump. It's fine. Watch the original Rosie Perez. You don't need another one.
It's kind of crazy. They made the white men be able to jump.
Isn't that stupid?
It was because they got jumping boots on now. It's like in the original Super Mario Brothers movie, which is my Super Mario Brothers movie. And that's where I'm staying. That's where I die.
It takes place on Mars or on the moon. Where white men can jump a little bit more. But you know what movie could be remade? Ghost Dad.
Huh. I kind of need to be remade.
Complicated legacy with Ghost Dad.
It's a little complicated.
This is Ghost Mom.
Exactly.
Well, as it is, the way La Llorona is described as looking when she comes to get you, it can indeed be terrifying.
Oh, yes.
In the version of the story in which La Llorona acts as a siren that lures drunk men to their watery dooms, she starts as a beautiful weeping woman who seemingly needs consoling.
And nothing is harder than a woman crying next to a river.
I thought I was going to go the angle. Nothing's more consoling than a hammered guy who went down to the lake to piss.
It seems you're pretty upset. Let me tell you something. You know who shouldn't be? You, because LeBron James shit the bed last year in the Lakers, right? And he was real upset. And he's like, good sports bar consoling.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But when the drunk man offers to help, the woman's face turns into either a bear's skull,
yes,
a bat, yes, a metallic horse's head, or, worst of all, a smooth blank nothingness.
That's the shit that creeps me out.
Yeah.
So much scarier. Always. Because then it's like you put whatever image you want on it,
yeah,
and it's always the scariest thing you can imagine.
No lips, no eyes, no nose. Do you remember in Twilight Zone movie,
uh-huh,
when they cut to the girl, that one segment where it's the bully, mm-hmm, that could wish like all of this shit? I love, that's my favorite bit in that movie. But cutting to the sister when they revealed that she had no mouth,
mm-hmm,
that was one of the scariest moments of my childhood.
That's great. Yeah, one of the most horrifying Sandman stories in the Sandman comic book is, you know, it just has one scene of a bunch of faceless, noseless, blank-faced ladies devouring a man slowly while he cannot move.
And then, of course, the opposite can be true if you remember Blank Face from Dick Tracy, and all of a sudden you're like, it's Madonna!
Yeah, oh, boy. Yeah, you're like, no face, big tits!
Whoa!
Now, this story, of course, teaches you another important lesson. Don't go down to the river at night when you're drunk.
Got you.
Even though it's super nice. It's really nice to go down to the river.
Why feeling, is this the lesson?
You're feeling, because you can fall in and drown really easily. Because it's dark.
There's either a serial killer in Austin right now, or people are getting fucking hammered
and falling into the river.
Falling into the river. Yeah, it's real easy to fall and drown in a river. Look at Jeff Buckley.
He wanted to. That's
he did. He wasn't drunk, but he's still drowned in a river.
Rivers have a strong undercurrent that it's unpredictable.
It's mm-hmm. true, and I might just be a city boy. I feel like rivers are easy to avoid. It's like there.
Yeah.
You're never just going to like happen upon a river.
But no,
you're going to see a river.
You can happen upon a river.
But the point is that you shouldn't choose to go down to the river when you're drunk because the rocks are slippery. You slip, you fall, you hit your head, you drown. There's all sorts of bad things that can happen.
Again, this is all Neil Young's crime.
I know. I know it.
But this version of La Llorona also warns men against honey traps.
Oh, yeah.
For example, in years past in the city of Austin, La Llorona came in the form of an urban legend called the Donkey Lady. The Donkey
now
Lady.
Now that's a name I can say. The Donkey Lady.
Yeah. It's actually almost too easy for me.
Yes.
The Donkey Lady would lure UT frat boys down from 6th Street to the Red River, where all manner of awful things may occur.
Wow.
They might look through your phone.
That would be the worst of all.
But when it comes to what children are told La Llorona looks like, it's said by some that the centuries of crying have marked La Llorona's face with two scars that lead down from her eyes. And because her body has long since emptied itself of tears, she now weeps blood.
It's nothing but blood!
It's fucking cool, honestly. That is cool. If you're crying blood, see a doctor.
See a doctor. Very scary to see yourself, though.
Furthermore, her hair has never stopped growing since she killed her children. It has become a tangled mess that wraps around her body. And likewise, her nails have grown into claws so that she might more easily rake the muddy waters of streams, ditches, and shores for the bones of her murdered children.
Can I ask her, just go downstream a little bit? Because, you know, you could, people find bodies all the time.
Mm. I did not come back from the dead in search of my children.
You just got to go down.
Talked to by some man.
I'm just a drunk guy at the lake.
I know how to find my children.
You want to find your children?
I weep professionally.
I know, I'm just saying.
I don't need you mansplaining how I'm supposed to mourn spectrally.
Have you looked near the dam?
I did think about that, but I ain't letting you tell me. All right.
I want to help you get to heaven.
You what? Why don't you just sit and listen to me cry and let me get it out instead of always offering advice to fix it?
I'm going to drown myself now.
I'll say, I'm not a river rat, by any stretch of the imagination. That's a term.
I know what it is. Yeah, but no one says you always say things that no one's accused you of being.
I never said you were a river rat.
But I say that as to say I'm not an expert on Texas rivers. However, I do know.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, because you know river rats. I mean,
that's a whole lifestyle.
That's a whole lifestyle. It's the whole thing. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's bad. Of course not. I have plenty of good.
Who are you pretending that you're going to upset?
Yeah. Who are you stepping around?
We've covered so much rape and murder, and at no point have you been like, "No, I don't want to step on any toes." But you've made up someone who's going to be offended by something that you're about to say about river rat lifestyle.
Well, what I'm saying is that the rivers of Texas, specifically like the Brazos River, which I grew up off the Brazos River, has many forks. It has many branches. It has many tributaries.
Where's the spoons,
Kev? Shut up.
So therefore, La Llorona would have a difficult time figuring out which of these breaks, which of these brooks, of these forks her children's bones lay down upon.
Do you think that maybe if she was Mr. Llorona, she could figure it out? Is that what you're saying? Because men naturally have more iron in their nose?
You know what is interesting? This is why if you do drown your kids, like that one woman who did it in the back of the car.
Andrew Yates.
You know where they are. So you want to tie them all together as one. And then because, what does she have, four kids or something?
I mean, it depends. I mean, it could be one, it could be two. Most of the time, it's at least two. So most at least of the time. Two.
So that is a different path. That's difficult to do. Right from your
grave. Well, this creature is said to act without mercy, nor hesitation. There is no negotiating with La Llorona, no argument. Nope. And this especially goes in other versions of the story in which she appears as a burning ball of furious flame.
I can do a quick rundown of the various forms, right? Yes. So yes, the tradition of La Llorona is you see the woman in white weeping by a river. She turns around, scares the shit out of you. You run away. And I've read several stories. There was one, a really interesting book we got called La Llorona Encounters with the Weeping Woman, which is it talks about the cultural importance of La Llorona, which we're about to get into. But it has come of those. One story I read where it's like, I was driving in right outside of Santa Fe, and this was back when Santa Fe was a very small city, and said that he saw an old woman on the edge of the street. And same thing, he said, normally, he's like, now I knew something was different because it was like getting struck by lightning. I saw this old woman weeping. And then as I drove past, she turned to look at me, and where was should be a face, it was a black hole. And I just turned, I just did a full U-turn and just drove away from it. Right? Scared the living shit out of him. That's one version.
Okay.
There's another version that back when Las Vegas was just a small little town, like literally just a gambling outpost, right? There was talk about like guys that were working there, they're building Las Vegas. There was one story of a guy gambling and this beautiful woman. And he said, how do I put it? It's like not the normal woman we see in this establishment.
Yeah.
Right. A Salma Hayek arrives.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, she comes in beautiful face, you know, long brown hair, and she sits with her dress and she starts gambling and running everybody under the table. And they're all like, this guy's like, she's great. She's great. She's like, we don't know what to do with her. And men are literally falling in love with her. And she's saying like, oh, you guys can all come back with me. And so finally one looks down. He felt the tapping on his foot. And he's like, oh, she's flirting with me. And he looked down and she did not possess a human foot, but it was a hoof.
Oh my God.
And then they freaked out. They were like, La Llorona.
La Llorona.
And then like they freaked out.
I think these guys are about to be leaving Las Vegas.
Well, what's the interesting about leaving Las Vegas was that he went there to die. So it's like he never left.
Isn't that something?
But then there's also a version of La Llorona that is a tumbling ball of flame. As in one story, a guy saw what looked like the woman in white, and then he realized it was morphing into this tumbling orb. It looks like a bunch of flames. And he was just like, nah, shit. Oh, what the fuck, right? It's been bad. You see that, dude?
Yeah.
And it arrived and it landed in front of them and then turned into a bundle of blankets. And then the bundle of blankets unfurled, and it was a bunch of babies with razor sharp teeth.
Oh my God, that's the worst one yet.
And everyone else said that, like, oh, they thought that, like, they're like, he was the most trustworthy man in the village. Like, we didn't think he would lie. And it haunted him all his days, seeing these like little carnivorous children.
Cenobites. Mm-hmm. All right, cool.
When it comes to the roots of La Llorona, the story is far more than a cautionary tale like so many that spring up around cultures, that develop around bodies of water. It's also far more than a story that keeps kids from running off on their own. And it's certainly far more than a cautionary tale meant to keep frat boys from drowning in the river.
Okay.
La Llorona is actually one of those rare legends that has its roots in both mythology and highly consequential historical events. It involves stories that involve beautiful women, terrifying creatures, and, according to some opinions, the betrayal of an entire civilization.
This Whoa. Is one of those stories when I typed in, you know, I always go to my research and I go to like YouTube and I go like, La Llorona. And just kind of trying to see it popped up, right? And then the first thing that popped up was this like very thick college level dissertation where it was these two teachers were talking on Zoom and they got really into the culture
yeah.
of Mexico. And I was like, oh,
that's where you checked out.
This is pretty intense.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to be getting all of this.
So that part that actually contained information, it's you were just like, no, nah, I don't.
It's just don't real that. Thick. So we're just going to say, listen, this is where this is Gringo time.
Get
it
to ghost tits already, guys.
We're going to do our best to break down a lot of very complex themes within Mexican history.
Absolutely. And Mexican culture. It's extraordinarily complex.
Yes.
We're absolutely going to do our best.
And what better three
this.
Amigos to do it than us?
Honestly, I think it's finally time for Last Podcast on the Left to explain Mexico.
Do you yes. have anything besides Mexican food?
Oh, my. You know, in Mexico, it's just called food. Let's just, can we go drown ourselves?
I hear.
I don't.
Oh, wow. Let's go.
Now, since La Llorona is a terrifying Mexican legend, it's only logical that her mythological roots lie in the most terrifying Mesoamerican mythology, that of the Aztecs. And since it's a dark tale, it's only natural that the roots of La Llorona are related to human sacrifice. Now, did the Aztecs practice human sacrifice? Most definitely.
They didn't yes. just practice it. They got real good at it.
But yeah, they nailed it. They got pro.
But was it a part of everyday life, as it is often claimed?
I hope so.
Unlikely.
Unlikely.
Probably not.
See, man, that was when we toured Rome. We missed out on all the good shit.
Yeah, that's when we should have been comedians. Ancient Rome.
Yeah.
I mean, Aztec sacrifice, it's one of the most hotly debated subjects in
oh, sure.
all of like academia.
Because who's writing the history?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The vast majority of what we know about human sacrifice comes from the Spaniards who conquered and slaughtered them. Just like everything we know about Druids comes from the Romans who invaded the British Isles. History is written by the victors. And
right.
just like the Romans, it was in the Spaniards' best interest to paint the Aztecs as pure barbarians. But when it comes to the crude ethnographies written by Spanish missionaries, they were actually usually pretty reliable when it came to the American indigenous people.
And I'm just happy that in no way does the American history of our land have a similar tale.
No. Nothing but we're straight shooters.
Yeah. Straight shooters.
Well, they're usually pretty reliable, but the purpose is, of course,
demonized.
Nefarious.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, these chronicles of Mesoamerican tribal and cultural practices, these were guides for future missionaries to pervert existing cultural beliefs and turn them into Christian beliefs. Because look at how fucking well it worked with Christmas and Easter.
Yeah, that rebrand was complete. Yeah.
Like, for example, like when it comes to societies like the Aztecs, the missionaries can say like, oh, y'all fucking love blood?
Yeah, well, we fuck do. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Oh, they like blood.
There's this fucking big bloody dude. He's always being tortured. His face is always
cool.
bleeding. He's got this big fucking stab wound. It's always bleeding.
Fuck, get him a band-aid.
He's got fucking nails driven into his hands and feet.
Damn.
Those are always fucking bleeding.
Fucking sweet.
Guess what,
right.
bro?
Yeah.
We drink his blood once a week. It's awesome. You'll love it.
Uh-huh.
Do it or die.
Fuck
so
yeah,
that's
dude.
The selling point.
Yeah, man. I drank blood last week and I got mono from it, man.
Isn't that nice? It's great that you can love something you're full of.
It really
Isn't
is.
That nice?
But the story of La Llorona is tied into all of these mechanisms. Where we tell who writes the stories of ancient groups? What do they serve? Like, what purpose do the writings serve for the people that are using it for their own benefit? And also how they got this information? Because one of the actual origins of La Llorona talks about what I mistakenly said incorrectly on the stream. Like the idea that the conquistadors, when they arrived, they were outnumbered by the Aztecs and they're sort of like, this is fake. Like, this is false. So the idea that they were so overwhelmed by their technology that they just kind of gave up the ghost.
And also the thing about, like, them believing that, you know, he was Hernando Cortez
was
a god. That's totally untrue. Totally
okay.
false.
But what they did was that they worked their way, very similar to the CIA has left their imprint around the United States.
If you bring up MKUltra into this again, Walter.
It's
buddy,
true.
Okay.
How I does was
it,
there.
How does it connect?
I agree with Henry on
okay.
this wholeheartedly, actually. It's a
Thank
very good
you.
Analogy.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just saying we've just
Where they
shoehorn.
Go in,
okay.
with the conquistadors would motivate the larger group of Aztecs, or they would motivate the people that were on the lower rungs of society.
Okay.
Because at this time, the society had already structured itself into a way where there was a group of a controlling class that ran everything and basically did what we're kind of going through right now, where they are essentially like making sure that no one on the bottom got anything.
When did the conquistador sprinkle crack everywhere?
This is basically what they did, but with La Llorona. La Llorona's
the
crack.
I got you. Okay.
Kind of, sort of. Yeah.
But the idea that they would manipulate the bigger, lower class to rise up against the controlling classes to help them flip the entire country to them.
You.
And there is one woman who helped them do that, which we'll get to here in a second.
Cool.
But those chronicles that we were talking about with the missionaries, they also worked as like a demon glossary, so the missionaries could properly recast previously revered gods as demons who have been tricking the indigenous people into worshiping them for centuries. Mm. Oh my God, it's so lucky that we came along. You've been worshiping a demon your entirety of your civilization.
You could tell he'd be a snake, right? He'd be a snake and you see the snake and you think, oh my God, I love this protector snake. He makes society. He helped all of us, but turn out he a demon.
Well, the gods really weren't the problem. I think maybe the human sacrifice and things like that was an issue, but
no,
the Aztecs
were
a fully
doing?
Functioning society.
Yes, they were.
They didn't need the conquistadors' help.
The Aztecs were an extraordinarily advanced society. Yeah. All of the Mesoamerican cultures were extraordinarily advanced.
They were fine.
Also, can we just say this? Everyone's like, they were so unbelievably extraordinary with technology. They had a clock. They made a big clock.
It was a calendar.
They had
They also had
horses.
They had a great amount. Well, they didn't have horses.
I thought the Spaniards
brought horses.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They showed up with horses.
Yeah,
they're like, what the fuck is this thing?
Yeah. They were
a big ass dog.
They were confused about the horses. Yeah. When they saw men on horses, they did think like, holy shit, that's a man. That's one creature.
It's a centaur.
Yeah, a centaur. Yeah, but the horses were a big deal, as were the guns.
Big hats.
But the Aztecs were also incredible warriors, but we'll get into the reasons later why they were not able to overtake or even fight back against the Spaniards all that well.
Hop right into it.
But to the point of human sacrifice. But to the point of human sacrifice in Aztec culture, being at least a part of the overall melange, it partly survived an oral tradition through La Llorona. See, just before the Spaniards arrived, and we're going to get into Aztec mythology right now.
Cool.
Sacrifices were given to the Great Mother, Coatlicue. And I'm going to do my best to...
This is not too bad.
Thank you.
You'll
be able to work your way through a Oaxacan menu pretty soon.
And Coatlicue was usually depicted wearing a long dress made of tangled rivers and drowning men.
Yes. Wow.
In some versions of the Aztec creation myth, she created the world. Now, Aztec mythology is fucking crazy violent.
Sweet.
But so is Greek mythology.
Yeah.
Remember fucking Saturn ate his son alive, the Titans. All that shit's incredibly violent.
Sometimes that son ain't good eating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's not to mention, again, the crucifixion of Jesus has been portrayed as extraordinarily violent. In other words, a lot of belief systems have violent roofs.
I
think all of them involve some kind of blood.
Plains Indian tribes usually don't. Their creation myths are usually very peaceful. They have to do with the land, coyotes, stuff like that. Yeah, those are actually
boring.
Yeah, they should have. I mean, honestly, that sounds awesome.
And the Jewish creation myth is that one's truly boring. Like,
what is it?
Let there be light.
Well, Kabbalah, transmission of nothingness to somethingness.
Yeah, Genesis, law, and God said, let there be light. And then that's it. God created the heaven and earth.
God's
took
just
seven
a fucking
days.
Executive just saying horseshit. He's just saying, you know, it'd actually be nice if there was some light in here.
Yeah.
And then he makes everybody else go scurry around and make it happen.
Garden of Eden. Yeah, I bet you they really enjoyed that series called Family Pies. They all fucked each other. According to that, we're all incest babies.
Family Pies.
We are.
Yeah,
we are all of humankind's incest babies at some point.
All of humankind. We've been getting caught in fucking washers and dryers since the beginning of time.
You got to figure out how to clean these clothes better.
Maybe that's one of those things that La Llorona is warning against, because if she's stuck down in the river, don't you come and do your naughty stepfather business with her.
I wonder if you did just leave a pile of dirty clothes if she'd wash it. Well, let's move on.
Well, some people argue that the Aztecs they're mostly misunderstood, you know, that they just loved violent stories. Because as we know, just because people have violent interests, that doesn't mean that they're violent people. In fact, most of the time, as our audience knows all too well, it's usually the exact opposite.
Yeah, everybody I know who looks scary a lot of time is the most gentle, loving person in the face. Everybody I know with face tattoos right. in 2023 is an incredibly sweet person.
And now we live in a world where khakis and blue shirts or
means
red shirts.
You're the fucking devil.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, it used to be Target employee and now it's neo-Nazi.
Yes. Yeah. But as one of the violent Aztec myths go that are related to La Llorona, a goddess named Cihuacoatl helped the god Quetzalcoatl create the current human race by grinding up the bones of the people yes. from the previous ages.
Well, using, I'm sorry. I really,
and that's using Quetzalcoatl's blood.
I'm sorry. I got to take a shit. I'm going to waddle out of here.
That is, this is great. This is really, really good.
My nickname was Crapawaddle.
We're really trying here.
I'm really trying.
No, you're nailing it.
Well, Cihuacoatl, by the way, was Coatlicue's daughter.
We're just going to get
you're
so
married
many
to a emails. To a non, she's fluent in Spanish.
This isn't Spanish. This is Aztec.
I don't fucking know that. Okay.
She's, no. she
yeah,
helped
she's,
a
yeah,
bit.
She's fluent. And she's also, she's not Mexican. She's a Colombian and Peruvian.
Yeah, you piece
I didn't
of
say
shit.
It. I didn't say she was Mexican.
I can't Did fucking I? Believe
I didn't say she was Mexican.
How dare you?
Beautiful, the beautiful people all around. Everyone is beautiful.
Well, Coatlicue, meanwhile, was decapitated by her children on the orders of one of her daughters, the moon goddess, who, with shades of La Llorona, was upset with her mother because her mother had become pregnant by a man who was not the moon goddess's father. Okay. There's a bit of infidelity here.
There's a little bit of a telenovela.
A little bit.
So even if you're a god, you get cheated on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Women be trifling.
Mm-hmm. I guess so.
But from the bloody neck stump of Coatlicue sprung the fruit of that forbidden union, the Aztec god of war, Huitzilopochtli.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And nice. Seeing that his mother had been killed, Huitzilopochtli dismembered hundreds of his siblings
Whoa.
And decapitated the moon goddess.
He's mad.
He then threw her head into the sky, and that head became the moon.
Oh, wow. I see. Oh.
Yeah, they had the coolest I fucking mean, myths.
It seems that is to be awesome. None of you seem to pay attention to me unless I'm full. Oh, that's fine. Oh, now yeah, you're all please. Taking pictures. Oh, okay.
Moon goddess.
Oh,
no,
fine.
We love you, moon goddess. Thank you for
no,
the tides.
No, reason.
Literally,
why
we
should
you?
There's no reason to
oh,
call.
God. It's just, we love you. I'll call you. I speak to you every night, moon goddess.
I held you in my
I know, thank you.
Vagina for 9 months. They cut a hole in me.
I know, moon goddess. I love you, mama moon. I love you.
Well, in another La Llorona connection, Cihuacoatl, she of the bone grinding, she was also the patroness of mothers who die in childbirth. Because in Aztec culture, childbirth was compared to warfare, and women who died in childbirth were honored as fallen soldiers.
It was extremely nice. Dangerous at yeah. the time. It was extremely dangerous yeah. until like 1965.
Right. I would say more like 2005.
Damn.
Yeah.
Still dangerous. It's still. It ain't easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a terrifying twist, these women became skull-faced spirits known as the Cihuateo, who would haunt crossroads at night where they would do what else but steal children.
Why the fuck did the conquistadors change this culture? I would have been like one of them. I would have been like one of the invaders being like, you know what? You guys are really cool.
You guys are crushing this.
I don't, I'm with you. Yeah, all this yeah, Spanish like, shit.
Why don't we arm y'all and be with you guys and we all hang out here?
Yeah, and
skull
then,
god.
Yeah, and then eventually we'll turn it around and go back and conquer Europe.
Dude, that would have been
Europe
crazy.
Europe could have used a little bit of cool shit.
Yeah, because yeah, I mean, I want to say a lot of this, people talk about, you know, obviously that some of this is very symbolic of Mexican-American culture, or like a kind of the way we deal with each other. But this is really an anti-Spain podcast. And I'm still like, we need to go for Spain. I think that's where a lot of the anger needs to be directed towards, because they started it, making the plates smaller. All these fucking guys do all day yep. long. They take off all afternoon. Yeah. They just get to sleep.
Absolutely.
The rest of us gotta go to work.
Mm-hmm. Shaped like a boot.
That's Italy.
No, that's Spain.
That's Italy.
Oh, God.
Now, when it came to an urban setting, it was said that Cihuacoatl roamed the canals of the Aztec capital of Tenochtitlan, wearing a cradleboard on her back.
Oh, yeah. The cradleboard. That's like the little backpack for babies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But on that cradleboard was not a child, but an obsidian flint knife,
yes,
the kind used in human sacrifice.
Oh,
that's a cool name of like a new John Wick style movie called like Single Dad.
Yeah.
So you just got a baby carrier, just like a full of guns.
Yeah.
Well, I like the idea of just a cool knife. Bring knife fighting back.
Oh, yeah.
Obsidian knife fight. Watching some old Jackie Chan films the other day, which is on TV.
He uses everything.
So cool. Yeah.
Well, ironically, though, the story that partly inspired La Llorona was not meant for kids. Instead, it seems like it was aimed more towards young parents. At least this is kind of my interpretation of this tale as I read it. And what sounds like a cautionary tale meant to discourage mothers from leaving their children unattended, a woman goes to the market but leaves the child behind in a crib while she goes to shop and hang out with her friends.
Madeline McCann.
Don't bring them into this. They're innocent.
But when she returns, the child is gone, replaced with an obsidian flint knife.
Cool, Dad says.
I mean, what? I guess.
Whoa, my fucking daughter's a knife now. This is awesome.
Most of the time when your kid is kidnapped, they don't leave anything. Maybe a ransom note or something, but.
Well, this signifies that Siwakoatl has traded the knife for the child, and the child has been taken away on the crib, strapped to Siwakoatl's back.
Man, knife fairy.
Knife fairy's really cool. What you can do is just say, they're going to have a better life that way.
Yeah.
And look at my new knife.
But look at this knife.
It's kind of cool.
Live from your grave.
Well, to round out the Aztec influence on La Llorona, when it comes to mythology, another likely inspiration for this cultural amalgamation is a creator creature known as the Hungry Woman.
Yes, this creature, a lot of times what it'll
do is...
That's
a name I can say.
When you sit to order food at a restaurant, she'll say, oh, I'm not very hungry right now. But then when you order something, she'll take half.
Or when you're sitting at home and you're trying to decide what to get for delivery, she'll say that she's hungry, and yet every suggestion you make,
she says no.
Oh, guys, this is not your podcast. The husbands can be right sometimes every now and again.
Well, this wandering god, the Hungry Woman, she is covered with dozens of mouths that cry out not for children, but for food.
This is awesome.
It's said,
it's cool.
Yeah, it's said that the Hungry Woman is Coatlicue herself, the devouring mother who contains both the womb and the grave.
Yes.
We're talking, this is like gangbang gold right here.
Because of
all the mouths.
All the mouths.
I actually was thinking, this is
blow
a good,
bangs,
I feel like the Hungry Woman's a good new, like, that, you know, chicken, you have a chicken pop-up.
Oh, sure.
Where you're the Hungry Woman, and you just see all the different mouths, but there's a chicken sandwich for each one of the mouths.
And see, I actually love that idea.
And Ben, I think you're this gaming, it's not going to go the way you want it.
Why?
Because there's so many mouths. All you're going to see is dudes' butts.
I hate that.
Think about it. Think about
it.
You're only going to see dudes' butts.
Dude,
you
just show up,
and you're like, oh, fuck, I'm late. And then you just see like two guys on step ladders on both steps.
Yeah.
You see two guys like in a triangle on each other's backs.
Yeah. La Llorona is really just a parable about being late to the gangbang.
So far.
The Hungry Woman, I suppose, more of the parable in that case.
But while La Llorona obviously has roots in Aztec mythology, she owes perhaps even more of her existence to the 1519 arrival of the Spanish conquistador Hernando Cortés.
Ooh.
He was there seeking the three G's, God, gold, and glory.
Oh.
Can you feel the power? Can you feel the glory? This is where it gets complicated.
Yeah. Now, what's fascinating in this context is that 10 years before Cortez arrived, the Aztecs began witnessing a series of bad omens that they believed were signaling the arrival of mysterious men who would wage war on Tenochtitlan, laying some very strong groundwork for the future legend of La Llorona. Omen number 6 involved a native woman covered in chalk, dressed all in white. According to accounts, she wandered the streets of Tenochtitlan and was heard crying and screaming throughout the night, saying,
my children, we now have to live far away.
Or,
my children, where should I take you?
Disneyland!
No.
Not now!
Supposedly, this woman was the aforementioned goddess Siwakoatl. 7 years after that omen, a famine began, and Siwakoatl again appeared in the streets of Tenochtitlan, crying in hunger. She would say,
oh, my children, we are about to be lost.
Finally, to make all of this as horrible as possible, These omens were linked at the very end of the Spanish conquest, when it was said that the hungry woman ate a baby boy in his crib.
Wow, hungry indeed.
But it extends. So this is really kind of about, like, these, what they learned was you could take these legends and you could flip them for their own good. Like the conquistadors understood that if you got in and started to understand how to speak their language, how they speak to each other culturally, that's the best way to manipulate a people.
You wrap a baby in a tortilla, you cook that up. I mean, that is not the worst.
You know, it comes down to it. Who knows?
Not the worst. Now, when you say not the worst.
If you're going to eat human flesh, I would assume a baby's flesh is slightly more tender, and I don't want to talk about it anymore.
You've already done this. You've opened it up. And actually, I know from accounts of cannibals that they say that those that have eaten baby meat, they say that it's very similar to fish, that it actually falls apart.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize. I was trying to bring some levity to it, and I realized it was the opposite.
It would be incredible in a taco.
Now we're about to get into history here, and it might be a little bit controversial. I know some of our listeners might have some very strong opinions on this one way or another.
And you're correct. We don't know. We've learned as much as we could about this subject, but for some people, it's just a line in a history book, and for some people, there's a lot of ideological stances attached to this character in history.
Yeah, and things that reverberate to this very day.
Are we going
to
get into CRT? Fantastic.
CRT.
Critical race theory. It's a joke about modern America.
Modern America.
Gosh, guys. We don't have kids. I tried to talk to Wendy about the racist beginnings of this country, and she kept saying, she's something about pulling the ladder up and doesn't care what anybody else hops, and she's already made it to this country and she doesn't care.
Let's move on.
No, we don't need to get into the details of how Cortez destroyed the Aztec Empire so quickly. But for the purposes of our story, we're going to discuss the controversial woman who helped him do it. Her given name was Malitzin, but the Mexican people would come to know her as La Malinche, a.k.a. the tongue.
Oh, did she meet the Dalai Lama?
Kiss my tongue. My tongue. That is such a fucking, that's a scary, the tongue.
She was she's controversial.
Controversial.
Okay.
Now, the legend goes that La Malinche had been a member of Aztec nobility who'd been captured and enslaved by the Mayans at the age of 8 or 9. But as it turned out, she had a knack for languages. And by the time Cortez arrived from Spain many years later, La Malinche was fluent in the languages of both the Aztec and Mayan empires.
Wow.
Now, when Cortez first arrived, he was given a large peace offering by the Mayans, which included 20 enslaved women. Amongst those women was La Malinche, the enslaved Aztec noble. She was baptized as a Catholic and given the European name of Marina.
Seems like the peace offering was actually exceptionally violent.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Yes. And if you thought La Malinche was very interesting, you should have met La, I don't know how to say butt in Spanish. That one was just called the butt.
La culo.
Yeah. She was nice.
Very, very good.
Yeah. Now, since La...
Really? Wow. I'm just trying. But the nice thing is, I actually saw someone hit a grand slam and they barely even hit the ball, but everyone in the infield did so poorly. So we're doing okay.
That's all we got to do. It's all about an in-the-park home run here.
Yeah.
Now, since La Malinche was reportedly beautiful, she was given to a Spanish nobleman. But when Hernando Cortez discovered how good she was with languages, he took her as his own personal slave. And she thereafter quickly learned Spanish. As an interpreter and eventually an advisor, La Malinche participated in every major event associated with the Spanish conquest of Mexico all the way to the fall of Tenochtitlan in 1521. She was like a mirror universe version of Sacagawea.
Evil Mexican Pocahontas.
Okay. Yeah. Now, reportedly, Cortez told one of his men that next to God, La Malinche was the most important factor to his success. Now, soon after the Aztecs were conquered, La Malinche gave birth to Hernando Cortez's son, Martin. Martin is therefore considered the first mestizo, the first boy that was a mix of the Spanish and indigenous people that now make up the nation of Mexico. She's sometimes seen as the mother of the Mexican people.
They didn't call him baby tongue, did they?
No. I don't ever want to meet anybody with the nickname baby tongue.
Oh, God,
hey, my name's Greg, but you can call me baby tongue.
Yo, I need like, to
oh,
see
you're
that.
Here for the are you here for the interview for the Which,
what if you are on a date, everything is going great, and they open their
What's
mouth
going
and
on,
have a baby tongue.
Yeah, you little tiny
Just
tongue.
Just a little like, tiny tongue.
I lost most of my tongue in the tongue wars in 2013.
However, the people of Mexico who have an opinion on La Malinche are usually split between one extreme or the other. Some see her as I said, the symbolic mother of the new Mexican people.
Yes, and the new Mexico. She's like this idea. She's that the combination of cultures.
Yeah, she is also seen as a woman who might have helped mitigate the suffering of her people from the inside. Someone who saw, there's no way we're going to beat the Spanish. There's no way we're going to beat these guys. So let's try to bring an end to this as soon as possible.
She probably said something like, it's not selling out. It's buying in.
It's buying in.
Yes.
And other people say that since she was enslaved, that meant that she had no choice but to collaborate.
Yes.
And they also say that she is unfairly made a scapegoat.
Because of that.
Yeah. Because, you know, in Mexican culture, like Mexican culture can be very misogynistic. Latino culture can be very misogynistic. And some Latino feminists see her as an unfairly maligned woman.
Yeah, okay. Because again, what you're seeing is a guy who used her inside knowledge to help gain the trust of many people, and then use that, you know, it depends on what you think. Are you happy
but
with
not,
Hernando Cortez's actions? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But, you know, but the biggest thing was that, you know, through her interpretation, what she was able to interpret, as Henry said earlier, like she was able to very quickly interpret Hernando Cortez's intentions to these lower classes of the Aztec people. So he was able to form, basically, he was able to show up, form an army, and fuck people up really fast.
Okay.
And that's the thing. Through that, other people see La Malinche as a traitor of the highest order who hastened the defeat of the Aztecs when she really didn't have to. In other words, it's not her fucking choice to say who should live and who should die.
But that's why the La Llorona story is so, the way people talk about it, it's just this mixture of rage and sadness and forlornness, because it's many things. It's this idea of, it's a complicated ghost.
Very complicated.
It's this thing where you look at it, you don't know really where it's coming from. Like, what were the intentions of this? If it was indeed a real force, it's symbolic of that. This idea of are we selling ourselves out? Like a mother who kills her own children. It's a symbolic example of like quote unquote selling out your country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean that's why Wisconsin's great. They have a thing called a hodag. Which is just a big-ass beaver.
Yeah, it literally is just a thing that sits there. And I think it only says hodak. Like, I think that's why it's called the hodak.
And they also have a sandwich called a hodak.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a whole thing.
The Bigfoot's just a big guy.
Just a big old foot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, some of these people argue that, you know, because of La Malinche, the Aztecs didn't have enough time to adapt to the Spanish ways of warfare. That eventually, if they would have been able to just kind of battle them on their own, they would have figured out how to go against guns. They would have figured out how to kill horses. Like, it wouldn't have been, they would have at least been able to fight
fuck some
for
shit
as long,
up.
To fuck some shit up for as long as they could until, of course, the smallpox set in. And then after that, they're fucked. But, and others say that, you know, she could have refused to collaborate altogether. She could have chose death.
She got murdered.
But she could have chose death over the betrayal of her people.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that it goes...
Tough options
but
all around.
But it's also, it's about a ghost story about somebody that's damned by their choices, because also you're a woman in society, so you're kind of forced to do these things, and then you're kind of punished for it by society.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I might be misinterpreting this, but from what I can tell, like, Malinche is still, like, a slang term. It's still used today. It's used by some people as a sort of, like, it's like an Uncle Tom pejorative.
Benedict Arnold.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know the story of Benedict Arnold.
It's a whole thing. It's actually much worse than Benedict Arnold, because this is like somebody who, it's basically someone who prefers Eurocentric cultures to their own.
I would compare it to the fact that Joe Gatto left the Impractical Jokers.
How?
Oh, it was his divorce. He was forced to in the divorce.
Yeah. Well, a prime recent example of this is the Latino white supremacist who killed 8 people in Dallas. What? 2 weeks ago?
Dude, they're like,
do you even remember?
I was speaking of this on Able Against Top Hat, and it's that race and ethnicity, different things. It's a whole thing.
It's very complicated.
It's a very complicated. There's a very good article in The Atlantic this week about it.
Whoa. I was speaking about The Atlantic the other day.
What is happening
Henry,
here?
Should I
break out the Metamucil? What's going on here? We're going to do some shots of wheatgrass and shit.
But no matter what the modern interpretation of La Malinche's legacy may be, whether it's one way or the other.
Yeah, we don't know.
At the time, in the 1500s, She was definitely seen as a villain to the people of Mexico when she was alive. And as we shall soon see, her actions and the subsequent consequences slowly began to intertwine with Aztec mythology, thus helping to create La Llorona. Now, once the Aztecs were conquered, the Spaniards began to recast the Aztec mythological heroes as villains. One Spanish cleric said that the Aztecs' ancestors had erred in their worship of these gods, specifically gods like Cihuacoatl, who had terrified the Aztec people throughout the night by her extensive wailing and crying. It's like, why do you want to worship that guy when you could have Jesus?
Yeah, Jesus never cried once. No, he was a manly man.
Jesus fucking got caught and murdered. All right.
I like my savior's not caught.
I like my savior's not caught.
But also, I think Jesus, there's a whole bunch of shit where he was crying like a bunch.
Well, the whole point with Gethsemane, he was trying to get out of it.
Crying.
Yeah. And then there's also the concept of a sacrificial God. Like, you have to, we are all supposed to sacrifice something because we're not good enough for heaven.
Right.
We must kill some part of something that is belongs to us in order to get all the good stuff in the end. So we make sure that we live like a really shit ass, boring life on this planet. And then we can go to the fun party. Again, Gilles de Rais, Michael Jackson, just like a killer, killers, all these guys just hanging out there, man.
Yeah, never forget Jeffrey Dahmer.
No, just loving life.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go with Epstein on that one. But all right.
Well, sure enough, by 1550, a few decades after the Spanish defeat of the Aztecs, the goddess Cihuacoatl had become a ghostly white apparition of a sobbing woman wandering the canals. She was now named La Llorona.
Dun, 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 dun.
Now, this first La Llorona was indeed a cautionary tale, but it seems like the first lesson La Llorona was meant to teach was, don't fuck a conquistador,
because
you ain't La Malinche.
Yeah, you're not trying to be a La Malinche either.
That was the first lesson.
Don't suck that dick.
Fuck a conquistador, because basically it was common for Spaniards to promise indigenous women the moon. I'm going to make you a noble woman. I'm going to take you back to Spain. I'm going to give you a better life. All you got to do is fuck me and everything will be great.
These men.
Yeah, but as soon as the relationship became boring or inconvenient, the Spaniards would toss the women and whatever children they'd fathered aside. And of course, you tell the story of, like, if you do this, if this happens to you, then you could lose your mind like La Llorona. You might murder your children like La Llorona.
Yeah, it'll hollow out your whole life. You've traded out your culture.
Yeah, you've traded out everything and your entire life will fall apart and you will wander the rivers, the canals for all eternity.
That lesson still holds true to this day. Be careful who you have kids with, because they might just end up going to Quick Trip and never coming back.
Mm-hmm. However, when it comes to La Malinche, it's hard to say whether La Llorona was inspired by rumors concerning La Malinche or whether people applied the La Llorona story to La Malinche after her death in order to make her death far more tragic than it really was.
Como si, como sa.
Yeah.
I think it's a little half a one.
Yeah. Half a one. Six of one, half dozen of the other. Now, it's thought that La Llorona first appeared about a year before La Malinche died, but a story sprung up around La Malinche's death that was, at the very least, the first half of the La Llorona tale. It was said that when Hernando Cortés announced that he would be returning to Spain with his mestizo son Martín, but without La Malinche, she took a sacrificial obsidian knife and plunged it into her son's heart in the manner of an Aztec sacrifice, then did the same to herself. Good storytelling.
Very good storytelling.
Yeah.
Damn.
Now, that, of course, wasn't true at all. After Cortés left, La Malinche married a different Spanish nobleman and died fat and happy, as far as we know.
Just get all fat and happy.
Get all fat, sassy.
Cook some soups.
Make soups.
Eat some bread, some desserts.
But it does say something that people wanted her to die a horrible death.
Oh, yeah. They wanted this to be real. They were very hopeful that she was the phantom that was crying, searching, looking for their lost children, because that would feel like a fate appropriate for the person that sold this out.
Yeah.
It is 50-50, right? Because it's like very, the greatest revenge is to live a happy life. You know, like, I'll say Corey Feldman. Good for you.
Yeah.
You're winning. But Dick Cheney's also still alive.
I mean, yes.
So it's like his revenge. It's like, ah!
Yeah. Well, in fact, after the Mexican Revolution of 1810, Mexican nationalists began to directly compare La Malinche to La Llorona, although in their minds, La Malinche was far worse, because after all, La Llorona had only drowned her own children.
And those were her kids.
Yeah.
You're allowed to, I brought you into this world. I'll take you out.
Yeah. Yep. But La Malinche had, according to the opinions of these people, she had condemned her entire people by aiding and abetting the cruel con- conquistadors who had tried erasing the Aztec and Mayan identities from Mexico completely, not to mention how many people they fucking killed.
So it's now an amalgamation.
Oh, yes.
It's series of sort of dystopian gods, kind of.
And that's why the ghost holds such a powerful cultural hold over many people. Sure. And it continues and it evolves. And again, it's just how many people have seen La Llorona? Yeah. How many people have talked about this style? And yes, the Banshees are in other cultures. There's other cultures that, but the Weeping Woman.
Which just shows us that the Irish aren't great at investing properly.
And that's the problem. The leprechauns, you don't understand. Just, it is nice to put it in a mutual fund.
Put it in a lockbox.
Now, when it came to horror stories involving the conquistadors, some went far beyond mere consorting, but many of those stories still had a sort of La Llorona ending. In one tale, the conquistadors who first arrived in Mexico were so taken by the beauty of Aztec children that they kidnapped the most beautiful kids and gave them to their Spanish wives as gifts.
With the kids there, I thought you were going to say women.
Yeah, no. Thanks.
And then they were like...
Yeah, they're like, ugh.
Look at these beautiful
children. Just get out of here.
Yeah, you got anything else?
I thought something like older.
Maybe nope. Is it got a necklace or something?
Here's a screaming, terrified child for you to take care of.
Oh, well, there goes the milk.
Lord. I thought flowers were kind of bad.
I didn't know it was going to happen so fast. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Here comes that milk.
You know how to be a mom.
Well, when this became.
That's all it is just shooting your tail.
Whoa! Whoa!
Men and women, huh?
Well, when this became a trend, it was said that some Aztec women killed their children rather than give them up to the hated Spanish, and La Llorona was one such woman. But in an extra twist, this La Llorona kills whatever child she finds during her wandering, perhaps echoing the old sacrificial Aztec beliefs, a child for a child.
Yes, child versus child.
Yeah,
that would be fun. Cool.
Live from your grave.
But although the rumors and legends ran rampant, there actually was a case in Mexico City around 1550, which may have been a direct inspiration for part of the La Llorona story. Hmm. Although, in this tale, no water is involved. Water seems to be something that is applied afterwards.
Okay.
Here, an Aztec princess fell in love with a nobleman and bore him twins. The nobleman promised to marry her, but of course married someone else instead.
These men.
And twins.
The princess showed up on the night of his wedding party to confront him. But when he humiliated her in public and turned her away, she returned home and stabbed her twins to death with a dagger that the nobleman had given to her as a gift.
The thing is, how do you tell the chick that you're married that you want to add one more?
It's such a hard conversation.
Yeah.
And I say, you know what you need to start with? Some nice music. Send him nice music. You know, he show up and be like, baby.
You guys like each other. Why don't you guys just try to kiss each other?
You guys.
And you make yourself the male cuck. They just, do what they do.
Yeah, guys like this.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't. But
it's a hard conversation.
It's a hard.
Unless they love each other.
It's a hard sell on the wedding night.
Well, yeah, because it's all like you didn't plan for it. Yeah. You don't have an extra burner plate for her.
Yeah, everyone's mad. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Well, having lost her mind during the act of murder, this woman then wandered the streets in torn, blood-soaked clothing, crying for her children. For some reason, I think it was because she used the dagger, she was found guilty of both murder and sorcery. And she was therefore hanged for her crimes.
Oh,
she was going to be hanged either way, but they
tacked sorcery on there.
Make sure she's extra hanged.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, still a child murderer.
Gotcha.
Well, from there, it was just a short jump to turn her into a wandering spirit who searches for her murdered children. And because the people of Mexico needed a myth that kept kids away from water, all of these stories of wandering, child-murdering women, they were all combined with the trauma of the conquistador conquests. And it all got mixed up to create La Llorona.
And, it is an interesting compromise getting rid of Title 42, but then putting the statue of La Llorona right by the border.
It's really intense. There's also something to the taboo of a mother killing her children.
Oh, yeah.
That is, in certain people,
it makes
it's
her
a taboo.
More scary.
Some people are just not into it.
Yeah.
I know.
But it's a specific taste. It's an acquired taste to kill your children. But it's weird because they are really as pointed. Because you see how many stories. I was just following the Letitia Stouch case, which is another case of a woman killing her son. Like, I got really into this year for some reason. I've been watching a lot of interrogation
footage.
Of course,
the Lori Vallow.
Oh, yeah. I've been really getting into negligent child homicide, child negligence.
Uh-huh.
I was a homicidal child negligence.
When sure. you say you're and, getting into it, like I mean, it's like hockey?
It's like me and a couple of parents meet up a couple times a week and just talk about how to ignore best.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, like, and you as the non-parent.
Which child do we torture?
Yeah. And you as the non-parent, you get to show up and think outside the box.
Well, that's the thing. I'm yeah. objective.
Yeah.
And I can take a right. look at their kids and be like, well, her legs are not going to make her good for any sports. So I feel like that's yeah. the one we got to starve out.
Yeah. That's great.
Now, while La Llorona certainly still lives on in oral tradition to this day, back in 1986, a woman in Houston brought the legend of La Llorona to life.
Huh.
A 29-year-old woman named Juana Lieja.
This is like the live-action Lion King remake.
Yeah, this is scary.
A 29-year-old woman named Juana Lieja took her 7 children on a bus to the Buffalo Bayou River, where the kids thought they were going to have a picnic. Oh,
yeah, we're going to have a picnic, and all your favorites are going to be there. Beethoven's going to be there.
This
and
is going to be bad.
Prince is going to come. Aww. And you guys love Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Dude, honestly, you just, if Prince and Beethoven could rock and roll from one concert, holy hell.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice.
That's just such,
that'd be great.
I
don't know. I don't know if the egos would match. I don't know if the egos would match.
No, they're getting paid. They're getting paid.
They just feel like they'd all be like, I work for so long.
I know. It's time
for me to relax. Like, oh, so we got to do a gig now?
He likes to do it.
Oh, man. Just those rock and roll fantasies. Just Beethoven and Prince.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm so sorry that I had a little bit of class.
Rock and roll jam. Oh, man. That's the best rock and roll jam I ever heard of.
Yeah, it's no Spunk and the Love Dicks. Whatever the fuck you listen to. We're doing a 10-parter on the Lunks. Yeah, they're
the
Lunks.
Don't make fun of our other highly successful show.
Yes. Yes.
The Lunks make a great... They're fart metal?
Yeah. The Doobie Brothers, that's pedestrian. We're actually talking a lot about... They're called the Octopus Bunch, and they only do songs about shovels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's
100%,
great,
and I love it. You know what? That's how I choose to live. How I must live.
Yep.
Great.
Well, indeed, once this woman and her children arrived, I don't know why I can't say Buffalo Bayou.
Buffalo Bayou.
I keep saying Buffalo Bayou.
It's because there's no such thing as a bayou in Buffalo.
That's yeah. true. Well,
once they arrived at Buffalo Bayou Park, located just outside of downtown Houston.
Oh, none of this is real.
Right in the middle of Houston.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Juana took her kids to the banks of the river and just started tossing them into the water one by one.
Jesus. That's a terrible Olympic sport, and I'm glad they cut it out.
Yeah, it's really bad. All right.
Her eldest, however, an 11-year-old, escaped and ran to get help.
Good.
A passerby named Chris Sweet, meanwhile, heard screaming and turned to see Juana struggling to throw the last remaining child into the water.
Ugh.
But by the time Sweet ran to help, 5 were already in the water, and 2 were already floating face down.
Oh, jeez. No.
After Sweet jumped in, he was joined by a security guard named Gilbert Chavez, and together they were able to save 3 kids. But the 5-year-old and the 6-year-old, the 6-year-old named Judas.
Ooh, that's an intense
Judas.
Name.
I never heard anyone naming their kid Judas.
I don't think that she wanted him to live.
Yeah,
if your name is Judas as a child.
I mean, I actually kind of like the... I like the sound of
the
it.
The sound of it's
obviously,
cool, yeah.
It's a cool name.
Yeah.
But it
means
hangs
like
yourself.
Ultimate portrayal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he died after being rushed to the hospital. Now, when police interviewed Juana after the murders, she said that she'd been worn down by a life of poverty and domestic abuse,
sure.
noting that her husband had recently beaten her so badly that she couldn't eat. She was hearing voices.
Oh,
it was later discovered that she was bipolar. And somewhat like child murderer Andrea Yates, coincidentally, also from Houston.
Weird.
Juana said that she wanted to kill her kids because she didn't want them to live in this quote-unquote bad world anymore.
Oh, it's horrible.
And she'd planned on jumping in after the kids were dead.
And that's why we're here to talk about social safety nets and why they're needed. Programs like SNAP, for example. Let's discuss the debt ceiling, shall we?
Oh, yeah, I love a good C-SPAN conversation.
What was the years? This was the
86.
86. That is so horrible.
But I do find the difference between female family annihilators and male family annihilators a lot of times comes down to an emotional quotient.
Mm.
Moms seem to be a lot sadder about killing everybody, but the dads are just super excited to move to New Jersey.
Is this your version of women driving drive like this and then drive like that.
Yeah, this is my club. Yeah, this is my club appearance. Comedy, yeah.
Here at Chuckle Hut, he's got some of the best murder comparison stories.
Oh, yeah. The moms like to drown their kids. I guess they want to go to the pool of death. You know, they mostly bury them in a field. I guess every father wants to be a gardener.
I love this bit.
Well, with women, what it seems like from what, you know, what few child murderers I have studied, a lot, especially like family annihilator child murderers when it comes to women, like it's about mercy. It's about, I want these kids to not have to suffer on earth anymore. Therefore, I'm going to drown them.
That theme comes up a lot.
And with men, it's usually like,
save you from my embarrassments.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, with men, it's usually like, I want to get out of here.
Jessica and I just started talking, and she's 28 and she's got different knockers than my personal, this wife I currently have. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, they're all kind of in the way.
If I get the divorce, I'm going to have to change my status on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. That's, I'm going to hear it from everybody.
Yes.
And so therefore, put him in the ground.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that Dear Zachary documentary. If you want to cry,
watch that one.
Reportedly, though, when Juana Lieja was interviewed by a Mexican folklorist the same year she killed her kids, it was said that she looked him in the eye and said, I am La Llorona. But of course, she's very mentally ill. And actually, Texas gave her a very fair sentence. It was surprising. You'd think they would have sent her to the fucking chair.
Yeah.
She got like deferred adjudication. They made sure that she got some mental health help. You know,
yeah, they should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the kids left.
And then that was it? You got a couple of meetings and then she just got to go home?
I think there's probably a lot to that story that they can handle that.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And to this day, the La Llorona legend spreads and continues to evolve. While she's still most active in Mexico and the American Southwest, you know, specifically Texas, the legend has made it as far away as Gary, Indiana, where it's been blended with the legend of the Phantom Hitchhiker. A woman in white has been reported drifting around a suburban community named Cadehi, which was once populated with Mexican-Americans who worked the steel mills in Gary, Indiana.
Hmm.
Supposedly, the ghost is said to have killed her illegitimate children who had been fathered by an evil factory owner. She drowned them in the Calumet River. When she's picked up, she usually asks for a ride to Calumet Harbor, but just before she and her driver arrive, she disappears, never to be seen again.
God damn it, man. I thought I was really going to have some action here later on tonight.
Mysteries of Gary, Indiana.
Yeah. Just, you can see the guy's pants down underneath his ankles and she disappears. Like, God damn it, man. I have the bumper sticker that says ass, grass, you know, or cash. No one drives for free.
Honestly, I guess I am truly only interested in unavailable women.
ghost women.
And that's La Llorona.
Wow. Man,
it's very,
that's crazy.
It's really intense. I would look up this book because it's really interesting to see how many different stories, how often, because we were going to tell some tales. Each one is very similar, but I think that's what's interesting. It's the fact that all of the stories are very similar. People see it again and again. And if the response from just our audience having seen La Llorona, it was so crazy.
Yeah.
I'm certain this must be, I mean, it's very prevalent in a lot of Latin American society.
Oh my goodness. All right, everyone.
Because Bloody Mary
has
also got a whole very intense historical past too. There's a lot of historical context to her.
Yeah.
But I never saw her. We did it multiple times. Do you remember when we did it on the show?
We did?
I actually don't remember.
I don't remember that at all.
I want to say this was really early.
It must have been.
We did it. No, didn't we just do it at your house?
Probably.
We may have just done it at the house.
I think we were hammered, and hammer, just did Bloody Mary like four or five times.
No recollection of that whatsoever.
It was at your house where the original studio was. With
228 and a half Ballroom.
Yeah.
Yes,
the
house that was, when you walked in sober, you thought you were drunk because it was on a slant.
Yeah, it was tilted.
Yeah. It was a little carriage house.
I love that little house, though.
Oh, no, I still think about that house. It was a wonderful place. It was a magical little dirt ball.
It really was.
I miss smoking inside.
Yeah.
Well, I'll light up right now, my friend.
Oh, cool. I'm like Dave Chappelle.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. That was very educational and awesome. We have a bunch of stuff. You know where to find us.
You can see all the horror shit. Check out our SiriusXM show. It's Monday, 6 p.m. And also check out our stream live on the Patreon. Also, Spring Hill Jack Coffee. Go and check that shit out. Do you have any dates?
July 16th. Yes. I got something coming up in July 16th. I've been told I have to market it. So come on out. That's going to be, look at my Instagram. I'll show you where it is. I'll show you where it is.
We're so bad at this.
I can see my manager or our manager just yelling right now.
I will pitch The Brighter Side Live is happening at 9 p.m. at the Pack Theater tonight. This is coming out Friday. So tonight, The Brighter Side Live. So come check it out at the Pack in Los Angeles.
Awesome. Yes. And I will be in the Cobbs Comedy Club located somewhere. So there you go.
And next Thursday on May 25th, season 3 of No Dogs in Space is officially premiering.
Yes. Fantastic. And Spun season is also coming out this week. We got a new Spun season.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
We can't wait to see you next Thursday.
You can't.
No, that's my joke, number one. It's a, what is the mean girl with a list? You call her a cunt. It's cunt. Because you see her next Thursday.
Still T. And also, we record on Thursdays. They listen on Fridays. And I see you every day.
Yeah, I see everyone all the times in my dreams.
Fabian's Top Hat. Let's wrap it up. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. Don't go to the water. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Again.
Congratulations, everybody.
My Llorona.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Then. Who was the band that sang that? Who is the band that sang My Llorona?
The Knack.
The Knack.
Nice.
Yeah.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.